Thank you very much. I hope you all heard what Grace says. I tells it like I sees it, you know. As Grace said, my name is Esther. I'm Esther Robertson, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I like that. You know what? I'm so full of excitement and joy and happiness and warmth, and I get a real charge out of people who are sober. I'm not talking about the new people. I'm not talking about the wonderful lady I met with 4 days, or the one I met with 3 weeks, or the one I met with 6 months, the one I met with a year. I'm talking about people who are sober, you know? We have a real problem with words. We come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God there are people who have been here before us. And I don't know how you came in, but I came in slithering, couldn't die, knowing I couldn't live like that, totally hopeless and helpless except being dumb. I had heard that Alcoholics Anonymous stopped people from drinking 7 years before. I didn't know what they did, why or how, or even where they did what they did. But being that I'm a dumb alcoholic, I tucked that into wherever we tuck things that we don't really know what to do, but we think we may need it again. And I didn't die. And the people of Alcoholics Anonymous told me the day that they picked me up, October 13th, 1954, if you will do what you see us doing and do as we will ask you to do, we guarantee you sobriety. I come from a world of words, but I don't ever recall before that day, that Wednesday, hearing the word sobriety. I knew sober in contrast to being drunk, but sobriety was a new word to me, and I said it to myself, and it felt full and rich in my mouth. It reminded me of the word delicious, and it is delicious. I have thoroughly enjoyed all of the conference. My gratitude is beyond the mere words of our language. I would hope that the powers that chose me to come and share this afternoon's meeting will know that a mere thank you, I'm glad you've asked me, is all that I can do, as there are no new words. But Virgil may recall when he called me to ask me to come down, I probably gave him an ear problem because I was quoting him 2 days before to a new woman. And when he called, I yelled, "My God, I was just talking about you 2 days ago." And I said, "Yes." And I cannot thank the Southeastern Regional for sharing, having this conference with the state of Georgia, for I get real turned on. I got some explaining to do before I finish thanking you. I want to tell you about this fan. I'm not nervous and I'm not flashing. It's because of the smoke. Now, you all are doing real good, but I want to tell you, when you catch me fanning, it's because for some reason I haven't smoked in 4 years, and my nasal passage is real sensitive, and I found out my father Hilliard uses a fan, and he gave me this one in Denver, and so I use it it's for the smoke. I don't get nervous anymore about sharing. I don't get uptight. I don't get spaced out. I was very cruel to Grace, my chairperson. I was sober 6 years one time. And I was just like Grace, because you see, they told me, if you're not nervous, you're going to lie. If you don't be nervous, you ain't going to be honest. And so I wanted to be honest, and I didn't want to lie, so I was nervous for 19 years. I really was. And when I was sober 19 years, I went to bed that night, and I was so excited about the fact that my next anniversary would be 20. I stayed awake half the night until it dawned on me, Esther, believe me, it's going to take one day at a time to get to 20. You better go to sleep if you're going to make it. And I went, and I had to use the same things from 19 to 20 that I used from for nothing to one. I thought my first anniversary was my longest year, but it wasn't. It was from 19 to 20. I had to do it one day at a time. I had to stay away from the first drink, ask God's help in the morning, thank him at night, and have an open mind and a willingness to change. And then one day I had my 20th anniversary, and I stopped being nervous about doing anything in this program. Because I'm not going to lie this afternoon. Because I told you I came here, and they said, if you do what you see us doing. And when I came in, AA was only 19 years old. And I met Bill Wilson with 19 years. And there were men in my area with 15 years, 10 years, and 12 years. I don't have to tell a new person today. I know a lady or I know a man that's been sober 20 years. I can say I have, with the grace of God and the principles of this program, an effort on my part, used what was given to me on that very first day, and I am free from alcohol. And that is why I want to thank the regional conference, those past delegates and trustees. I want to thank you for letting me be here to share with you, for you are the reason. You're going up to New York, April, for a week. I've seen your schedule. I was fortunate to serve as alternate delegate for the Northeast area of Ohio. I don't even know the panel numbers, but it was the year, let's see, 71, 72. And would you believe it, they voted me back again. And I served 73, but then I met a dude and moved to Pittsburgh. And I didn't get to serve my last term, and then they started having East Central Regionals. And I made my first East Central Regional Conference this July, and you know, I'm still very loyal to the East Central region. I'm thrilled to pieces that Virginia is here. I just learned who the trustee for the Northeast Regional, where Pennsylvania is. I've been feeling guilty about that because, you see, if it were not for men and women willing to work hard, there would not be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have hardworking people who don't get to be delegates. You know, there are a lot of jobs around AA that are very vital and important. And I'd like to thank all the hundreds of people and the different committees and things. And Virgil dared to want to apologize for not spending more time with me. And he has a job. And if he does that, that's sufficient. For I would love to spend time with each and every one of you. And I'd like to thank all those who've been coming to the rap sessions. You know, I cannot thank you enough for sharing that fantastic suite. I have not been sober long enough and prosperous enough not to enjoy luxury. That's one of the benefits of being poor. It is. Man, when you get treated like this, baby, you enjoy it. And it is just wonderful, each and every one who has come. And I'm glad that Maggie brought her goodies over there last night. We're the poor crowd, you know. They're the rich crowd across the road. But they got a little old room, so they go over there and enjoy our suite. But they had to bring their goodies to get in there. And I'm grateful for those who have jobs that you may not know. How do we get from the airport? John, I can never remember his last name, Fleming or something.
Flemister,
thank you. He's doing a fantastic hospitality job. He met me at the foot of the stairs at the plane. And I remembered him from the Charleston Southeastern because he did it all wrong. They had John on the Alcathon. He got up there and started on gratitude and cried like a baby. I said, John, you're never supposed to start talking about gratitude first. You always cry. John said, don't make no difference. I'm going to cry anyway. It's okay. But, you know, John met me. But there was a very important man coming from that airport over to this hotel. He told me to be sure and tell you all down here in Atlanta that this child had her a white chauffeur. Hey, Rand, did I do it like you told me? See, I got to get back to that airport. I'm sober. See, when you're sober, you get a little sanity, you know. Miriam, whom I met in Pennsylvania, about 2 years ago, has been very, very generous. And I think she is trying to give me all which they gave her in Pennsylvania. But she asked me upstairs before coming down to this meeting. She took me out to a very nice place for lunch. She dared to ask me, could I eat before I talk? And when we were upstairs, I don't know what she thought I went in the bathroom for. But she said, do you want a minute alone, quiet? I said, I've just had one. I did what I went to do. I get back to words, and we come to the program, and they say that if you do as we're doing and do as we'll ask you to do, we guarantee you sobriety. To me, that word meant more than just abstaining from a drink. And every day, more these last 3.5 years that I've been in Pennsylvania, I have thanked the God of my sobriety that he blessed me to come into this program at the place, the time, and with the men and women that I did. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in Cleveland, Ohio, those men were men that were sober. They did not stand before me as demigods. They did not intrude into my private life. And they did not tell me how to worship my God. They told their drunk stories, but they told a sober story. And I started leading to myself last week. I do this. I get a lot of the rubbish out of the way. All of the things that people up there were doing that I should tell them about down here. And I realized that that wasn't what you brought me down here for at all. And by the time last night got here and I put 3 men, how about that? 3 men out of my room at 3 o'clock. I dig that. I like that. Woo. I'm not going to tell you about the 15 women that were in there before. And I began to settle down and I knew that this was the day, as we live one day at a time. It was no longer tomorrow. I didn't have to say one day at a time, Esther. And I began to feel what I wanted to give to you or share with you or put before you, present to you, offer to you. And Bill Hewitt's here. We were in Florida together, and it happened at Bill's conference. At that time, I was so involved with page 164. And when he was to do the reading, he told me that's what he had selected to read. And I was sober long enough not to call it a coincidence. And when Bob was told he was to read the promises, I wasn't that much surprised, because that's what I thought about this morning before I went to sleep. The promises. And the words, if we are painstaking about this part of our progress, and the last words that we will find that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Freedom is one of those promises. Freedom from fear of people and situations and things. Whenever I talk, whether it's at a meeting of four people, two people, or whether I'm talking on the telephone to one person or talking face to face, I want the person or persons listening to me to be free to hear what I'm going to share with you. Because it is not important if you are able to quote one word that I say. I don't know, it isn't important if you leave this meeting not remembering anything that I say. I would hope that you would remember the feeling that we're going to share in this few minutes that I'm going to talk to you. It's so unfortunate that all I've got are words. And it's not about how I say it. But I wish that you can find the feeling that I say when I suffer and tell you of my shame and my pain. And I hope to get you well quickly because I don't dwell on the drunkalogue. Because I don't think you think I'm lying when I say I'm an alcoholic. I don't think you have to have a blow-by-blow, gory, gut-wrenching, sickening description of what I was. It says we tell generally what happened. But I hope to get you well in a hurry so we can enjoy the message. The middle part of that 12 step says we try to carry a message to the alcoholic. I don't know the numbers of the traditions all the time, but I know the traditions. The one says the primary purpose of a group is to help the alcoholic that still suffers. I'm going to tell Charlie now what a nitpicker is. Charlie wants to know what a nitpicker is. I'm a nitpicker. You see, being a dumb alcoholic, and I went to my hell, I went to the end. I drank it all up. I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, an undeveloped wreck. I have no quarrel with anyone's story, and I accept because I listen. And I understand when people say that they were bankrupt. They had jobs, families, they acquired reputations and lost them. They acquired many things. But I'm the other side of the coin. I acquired nothing because I never acquired a me. I willingly sunk into being a nothing. In fact, I used to love those large words that said things, what I just said. I always considered myself a non-entity. I always said that I have an inferiority complex because I was undeveloped. I can't tell you why that when I reached the age of freezing, I lived with fear of failure. I don't know why. But I arrived here, and I was able to listen because there was nothing to protect. And I reach out to you who are sitting there with something to protect because you are the son of, the daughter of, you're from a place, or you were exposed to, and your programming said you ought, must, and should be. Join me in feeling it ain't worth it. I had nothing to protect. Oh, I had a very arrogant mother. We were poor but proud. And she was a wonderful mother. She was a human mother. She was an old mother. My mother was 42 years older than I. But it took me 6 years of uninterrupted sobriety and application to the best of my ability. And she had to be broken in body and spirit for me to recognize that she always did the best she could at the time as she was. She had something to protect. But I arrived here, surrendered, and I listened. And so that you won't be confused about my being a nitpicker and wonder if you are, become a nitpicker. If I say a word that isn't familiar or different from the one that you've been taught or your sponsor has given you, if my word means the same thing or if it fits, don't quarrel with me about the word. Quarrel with me about the essence, about the meaning. I've seen people get so spaced out on semantics, that's another sober word. But if I say my sponsor told me to participate and your sponsor told you to give or to share or receive, okay, we're all doing the same thing. But be free not to have to protect yourself from me. I came here knowing I did not know how to live soberly. The men of my home group told me, don't think, drink. Don't even discuss with yourself if or when you'll ever drink. Alcoholics Anonymous' primary purpose is to maintain sobriety. Primary means first. Maintain means keep. You can't keep something you haven't got. You don't get sober in AA. You learn how to stay sober in AA. I have not been getting sober since the first day I shook and drank 12 cups of coffee and went home and tried to die. You see, I'm a stone dummy. I didn't even know how you drink coffee. We were tea drinkers in my home. And everybody was so kind, and it was about 12 minutes of my first meeting, and every one of them got me a cup of coffee, his way. I had coffee with 3 sugars and a lot of cream, 2 sugars and some cream, 1 sugar, no cream, cream, no sugar, coffee, and I went home and died. And I ate 1,000,000 donuts before I had the power of decision to say no thank you. They told me I had the right not to know, that I didn't come here to know. I came here to learn. I owe such a tremendous debt to every man and woman of Alcoholics Anonymous who stayed so that there were men in Cleveland, Ohio, who weren't afraid to sponsor a woman. There weren't that many women sober. The way Cleveland did it, I think they may still do it. You got a call, and they try to find the group that meets on that night and the nearest to your neighborhood. That's why I went to the St. James group, and there were old men. Now, I mean, them cats were old. I was 27 years old, and the youngest dude was 40. By the way, I want to tell you, I'm 50 and a half years old today, and I'm young. You know, the thing about being sober and enjoying sobriety, you can really get free. You know, I that's why I say I watch people who are sober. And, man, they work so hard to try to communicate sincerity, you know. I'm just an old drunk. That's a lie. I'm an old drunk. I'm a sober alcoholic. I'm an ex-drunk. Drunks drink. I don't drink. And I say, they don't talk right. There's a new language I learned in alcoholics. Not a new language, but a way to use our language. And the men in my home group had fun. They laughed. They joked. They teased. They partied. And I like what Jimmy Hodges says, when you come to a meeting, look forward to coming to a picnic. And you know, it wasn't hard. Someone made the remark, I wish I could remember which one of the speakers. It wasn't giving up something. Oh, it wasn't giving up a pleasure. I think it was Yvonne. But giving up trouble. I sat and I shook and I ultimately got sick and I got ill and I ate donuts and coffee and I got fat. I gained 25 pounds the first 3 years I was sober. By the way, don't snicker. I love it. Let me tell you about me. I never do it right at the right time. When I was 13 years old, I was so incredibly skinny. And at 13, little girls are supposed to do things, you know. I didn't. So So, you know, I got sober, and I did. Woo. I stuck out all over. Well, what happened? I was sober 13 years, and my friends gave me a weight problem. They dragged me into Tops. So for 7 years, I dieted. Some of you may have seen me doing my skinny mini days. I was in my foolish 40s then. And I wore the minis, and I switched my tail feathers and shook my money maker. That's not true with me. I never made any money. Remember, I'm one of the dumb alcoholics. But I went through my skinny days, and do you know the only people who ever told me I looked good were women? Not one dude ever flipped out. But when I gained my weight back, they said, baby, you sure look good. I am a real conversational piece now, you know. When I walk away, they say something. Now, I don't know what they say, but they say something. And not only that, I still like them things called boobs, you know. And if I lose 10 more pounds, they go, my belly stays and everything else, you know. So I've just come to the conclusion, I like me just like I am. I really do, because if I thought I had a ball in my foolish 40s, I am really having one in my fickle 50s. Because now I'm old enough to do just like I damn please. I don't have to worry about nobody. Because, you know, when you're young, you're still all bound into that what will they say. And you're going to go someplace with somebody and you call them up and you want to know, what are you going to wear? Because you don't want to be different. I want to be different. Do you know every one of us in this room are different? We alcoholics get on a ridiculing kick. We want to show that now that we're sober, we're different from what we were when we drank and we thought we were unique. We are. Every one of us got a soul. Every one of us got our personality. There's not two personalities in this room exactly alike. But in our differences, we are the same. We're children of God with the freedom to be ourselves. And I wish we would be sober selves. Not dragging all the pain and grief and agony and yesterday's ideas of trying to make it right. Our past was not right. My past was ugly. But I'm not here to justify my past, and I have no shame or guilt for anything that I did yesterday. And I can enjoy today, not the security of me, but of the fact that men and women for the last 42 years have banded together and sweated and cried and damn near died and prayed and fought and worked. And we are staying sober. And that's what I came here, to learn how to stay sober. And the men in my home group say you'll have a new way of life. New way. Not rehabilitated. I didn't patch up the old. And they gave me that paragraph before the steps, before I took the steps. They pounded it into me. You got to get rid of old ideas. You got to be willing to change. And all I had were the old ideas. And they wouldn't let me put them on pedestals. And they wouldn't let me separate myself from them. The first six men whom I admired and followed were all ex-convicts. The man who did the most for me was a man who had been to 4 penitentiaries. He had been on death row for 18 months. They didn't treat me any differently. They said, you're an alcoholic. But here are the tools. Use them. And they lived, let go, and let God. They lived it. They didn't talk it. But the question was once asked, how can a blind woman become an alcoholic? I can answer that question real quickly. Drink. And by the same token, how do you stay sober? Don't drink. But how do you live a new way of life? Learn the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says to practice these principles in all of my affairs. It doesn't say, Esther, get in the affairs of the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. You are the principles. I'm not supposed to get into your affairs. A lot was said at the Rev session about comparing. And I wonder, do we know how to compare? When I came in, I heard the automobile wrecks and the wife beatings and the neglected children and all that. And my norm, I did it my normal way. I again became a nothing. I wasn't even a good alcoholic. I had to lie about that because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I thought an alcoholic was a derelict. And I was a washing, bathing, change clothing, sleeping between two clean sheets, drunk. So I didn't know whether then I said, yes. I was drunk every day for the last 2 months just before coming into AA, and alcoholics drink every day, so I won't explain it to them. I'll just say, yes, I'm an alcoholic. But because these people who had done other things did not separate me, I kept going to meetings. And one day I realized that I am an alcoholic because I cannot safely take one drink. For after taking only one drink, I cannot predict how much I'm going to drink nor what I will do while drinking. I heard the word, I hadn't done terrible things. I don't know what terrible things mean. I don't know what terrible things, what you mean. I have recognized Esther with alcohol is capable of doing anything that any other alcoholic has ever done. All I need are the same set of circumstances and the same opportunity. What I did in my limited way was terrible. I went to hell doing these non-terrible things. I didn't beat a wife. Hell, I didn't have a wife. I didn't neglect my children. I wasn't responsible for my child. He was either with his dad or with my mother. I didn't lose any jobs. I quit them. I'm an irresponsible person. But I drank alcohol, and I went way beyond what I wanted to go. I lost me. I am one of those who have been fortunate to be sober twice as long as I drank. And I need meetings more today. I need the principles of AA more today. I need to listen to new people more today than I ever do. New people is why my enthusiasm is so. Being a dummy, if there were no new people coming in today, I might believe that television. I love television. I like radio. I like newspapers, magazines. I like all the medias. But on television, they told me several years back that they took cigarette ads off because of humane reasons. They loved us so they didn't want people to die as a result of smoking cigarettes. So they don't advertise cigarettes on television anymore. They advertise wine. They advertise beer. And see, being a dummy, I'd say, oh. And this Boone Farms apple wine makes grandma go ha ha ha. It makes the children go ha ha ha. And now they've got one on about cold duck and cold turkey. I thought it was a lunch meat up until 1970. I didn't know. I really did. I'm still a dumb alcoholic. But the new people, you are the ones that come in here behind cold duck, cold turkey, Thunderbird, Wild Irish Rose, Mad Dog, Scuba Dive. Man, they really stay up all night looking for those names. But you know what? You wind up in AA. And I'm grateful for you. You share with me, and I feel with you, and I know why you're sighing and dying and crying and why you can't believe me. Because it still hurts so bad. I hurt so bad. From the time I was 16 years old and met with alcohol, I hurt so bad. I accept that many people did drink moderately for a time and crossed an imaginary line into alcoholic drinking. But I accept for me that I was an alcoholic from the first time I met with alcohol. Alcohol lied to me. My mother had afforded me the type of education that she wanted for me through her lifestyle. We were poor, but there were people who were willing to help her do for her children. And I had a private school education. I won scholarships. I like telling you that, because nobody would believe it today to see me. And I'm so glad I don't look like that no more. Oh, God, was it ever a mess? Oh, have you ever gone to a private school and you wanted to say bad words and you, so you go in the bathroom and you write them on the walls? And not only that, you leave the girl's jot up and lock the door and slip out and blow the nuns' minds. They want to know who left the jot up in the girl's bathroom. That's a big deal, you know. And you're so pathetic. You know how dumb I was? I started drinking at the age of 16, and I got married at 19, and I was still a virgin. Boy, I sit in these meetings, and I get blowed. You know, these people excuse everything on alcohol. But I had a mother that didn't know the phrase extenuating circumstances. I didn't know alcohol would let you do things like that. Now, I hear people blaming all these terrible things on alcohol, you know. And I sit in the meetings and they don't know what I'm doing sober. And then they say it's my alcoholic personality. If I've still got the alcoholic personality after being sober 23 years, there's something wrong with my accepting this program. By the way, I don't have a program of my own. There's only one program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, as an individual, was told that I had to learn it and use it. And if after being sober when I was sober 5 years, they made me responsible for my conduct. They said, Esther, you can no longer say because you were once an excessive drinker and drank alcoholically that you're acting a fool today. If you are a fool after you sober 4 or 5 years, you're just a fool. You know, the thing about leading meetings, you know, you know, being respectable and all that sort of stuff, you know. You know, Virgil told us don't wear a bikini. I think he was talking about the strapless dress the other night. Woo-hoo. I hope he was. I like being notorious. I said, now he's going to worry like heck, what am I going to wear when I lead? But, I, you know, when you be respectable, and especially with new people, and they says, oh, this is a lady, she's sober. It starts when you get in your teens. When they say, oh, she's sober 13 years, they immediately put you in a place, you know. And they don't know, I don't belong in that place. I'm just a lady, a woman sober. Just a woman sober. And when I stand up to lead, I can almost feel them wondering. I wonder what she's going to qualify on. I wonder, did she do it? I did it. You know, the thing about listening to other women lead. I am unique, especially in Western Pennsylvania. Pete can tell you, I'm the only sinner in Western Pennsylvania. All the women in Western Pennsylvania worked on jobs and got their money. They weren't going to be beholden to nobody. And they bought their own booze. And I still think there's something wrong with them. But that's because, see, I'm a dummy. See, I don't know. I believe that sex is not a bad word. I really do. You know, I'm trying to teach them in Western Pennsylvania that God does know where babies come from. I don't think they think God knows. But sex is not a bad word to me. And when I sit in a meeting and I feel that we're getting well, and somebody is making eyeballs at somebody else, and somebody else is holding hands, and somebody else is making arrangements, I'm glad. Because I got so sick, and I listened, and people got so sick. And for anybody to arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous with any drives left, any impulses to do regular things, we ought to be grateful. Are these extravagant promises? think not. You know, because I looked for it out there. I sure did. You know, I'm going to get this qualifying over with because I've got 16 different things running through my mind. And you know what? I'm down here in what's called the Bible Belt. And I don't know. I know you all know something about it. I see children and things like that, you know. But maybe you think it happens through osmosis. I don't know. But when I drank, I hungered. And I feel with everybody who was searching and reaching and longing and sighing and dying, and it kept eluding them. I started drinking rum and cokes, and I got sick, and my good friends, that word good blows me away. You know, my mother used to beat my butt and say, now you go to school and you be a good girl. You be smart. My mother didn't want to have dumb children. And I'd go to school, and the teacher would ask a hard question, and I'd answer it. And after school, the kids would beat hell out of me. You always have to be so good. You always got to answer the question. I've been real confused about that word good. And I hear people talking about a good drunk. I never had a good drunk. I hear people talking about, and I got a hold of some good corn liquor. Oh, did I ever identify with Julian and that corn liquor Friday. You know, I don't know about you all. In Cleveland, we didn't get much corn whiskey. And when we did, they'd always say, Esther, this is some good stuff. You're real lucky. 139 proof and never been cut. And boy, I'd get me a big old glass and I'd throw me a belt down. It would cut off my breath. My eyes would run. My nose would run. I'd slobber when I got my breath. I'd say, that sure was good. Dumb. I never learned how to drink. Never did. But my friends would ask me, Esther, why do you drink so fast? And I'd tell them I have to get there. I was trying to get there. Because if I got there, I'd find it. And it was what I wanted. I drank for 11 years, reaching out, and I never got it. I only had it once at that first party at 16 after my first three drinks. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful because it lied to me and said, this is it, baby. And where I'd gone to that party full of fear after those three drinks, man, I wasn't afraid. In fact, I looked around and I had a knowledge. And I said to myself, hell, this party's dull. Let me get the show on the road. And it was a lie. I got drunk that night. And I never controlled my drinking. If I didn't get drunk, it wasn't because I stopped. It was because circumstances and opportunity prevented me from getting drunk. I did everything necessary to qualify for this program. I exploit it. I always feel so sorry for men. I love you. If the Lord made anything better than man, I swear he kept in heaven for himself. You know, I always emphasize I like big men because right now my dude's big. But I've had little ones too. You know, and them middle-sized ones sure do look good. You know how good they look in their clothes, you know. And them bald-head men, Lord, they ain't sexy. I agree with Liz. Bald-head men just do things to me. And, you know, they all right. And I owe so much. I owe so much to men. Because when I was out there young and dumb and blind, it were the men that stood between me and the things that might have happened to me. And I said, I didn't want there to be no God. I didn't want there to be no God. And I did not know it was because there was a God in them that they wanted and didn't permit the things to happen to me because I wasn't the victim. I victimized. I used everything because I was dumb. I didn't know any better. You see, I hope Dodie don't mind my... She has got the most lovely Georgia Peach accent I've ever heard. And if she had ever drank in Cleveland, she could be dead today. Because up there, they think women that talk soft like that are stupid. And when I didn't have much money, I'd go out. And, you know, they're all kind of men, by the way, since I'm talking about men. You know, men and women, you know, they go together like eggs and bacon and potatoes and gravy. You know, it's clean. It's wholesome. Nature did it or somebody. Blame somebody. And, but the men got certain personalities, and they're the guys that They dig hair. God let a long-haired girl go switching out her hair all bright and shiny. Boy, he gets turned on. He said, dig that pretty girl. He don't know what her face looks like, but that hair, you know. And then there's the guys that dig the boobs, you know. They don't care what the rest of the chick is. She got big boobs. Dig that pretty girl, you know. And then there are the derriere men. For those who don't know, derriere is that which we use to sit on. And when they see those chicks walking down and it's acting like two little kids fighting under blanket, they say, hey, dig that pretty girl. And then there are the leg men. Now, thank God for the leg men. Because that's all I ever had going for me were shapely legs. I was skinny. I didn't have derriere. I didn't have anything, but I had shapely legs. And the dresses were short then. And I had a play brother who was a musician, and he played in all kinds of small joints. They were very profitable, but they were small, and they were dangerous, and they were dingy. And I would go where Jimmy would be playing because my mother would let me go. She felt that Jimmy would look after me, and he did to the best of his ability. But I would go with little or no money. Jimmy learned early that I had an enormous capacity for alcohol. And he would tell the bartender, don't give her anything but beer on me. Now, I didn't like beer. You know, by the way, I'm the only woman that ever left panties in the washroom, by the way. The reason why I did that, I did not like women who had telltale signs on their legs. And I found out if you got rid of the silk, you know, that held the water that ran down, it didn't telltale tales. I wish I had all those myriads of panties. Today, they're $5 a pair and I could use them. But I'm the only woman that ever did that, you know. And that's why I didn't like beer, because you just can hold a little beer, then you got to go away, and I'm trying to keep the thing going. So I'd take my one little beer and I'd wait. And I'd cross my legs. Now, I don't know whether the guys would come in the bars looking for dimes, gum wrappers, or cigar butts, but their eyes would get as far as my knees and say, what are we drinking? Well, we'd start to drink. And Jimmy would waddle over after a while, like looking like a male gorilla, and he'd say, sis, are you ready to go home? And the poor buyer would say, is that your brother? And I said, uh-huh. And Jimmy would scold me all the way home. He'd say, you're going to get us both killed. You can't go on playing your little games and not paying the price. But by that time, if I'd have had another drink, and what Jimmy said to me was just so much noise. I had to be sober 2 years before I could identify with the men who spoke as though they walked in the valley of the shadow of death. So that I was there too. When I could see, I took no notice of these men because I wanted, and I thought if I had, I would be, and I didn't take any responsibility for them. And I found out if you talk kind of like you're from the South, you could get away with a whole lot. And I'd go out with my little or no money, and some nice man would come up and go, hi. And I'd say, hi. And he said, what's your name? I always told him, Liza. And he said, Liza, where are you from? It didn't matter, but I mostly picked on Georgia. And he said, well, how long have you been to town? I always said, since yesterday. And he thought he had a live one. What he didn't know, he had me. And I didn't want to pay the price because, you see, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And I was sick and I hurt and I wanted and I longed and I reached out. And I didn't take the responsibility. And the eighth step says, make direct amends whenever possible. And it wasn't possible because I didn't take notice of the men. And I lost my sight. And I drank in the streets. And I drank in, I don't mean when I say streets, nightclubs, and after hour places. I collected the knowledge about those. And I found that the lower the dive, the more horrible the place, the more safe I was, even though I was terrified. I live with fear all the time, but I think I did want to die sometime, but not for long. They said I tried suicide, and I got stopped. You know, when you get a little honest, you realize that I would have been the most surprised person in hell if I'd accidentally killed myself. I got married at the age of 19. I divorced my husband at the age of 26. Because he didn't make me happy. All my life, I had on my back like an old-fashioned 11-foot cotton sack. And in it every day I put those things from the time I was a little bitty girl that I had done wrong or thought wrong or over which my mother had punished me. And every day that I lived in my youth and I wanted so much to be happy, to be joyful, I get up in the morning and I picked up my weight of errors. And when I came to AA, I still had my weight of errors on my back. And they said, let go and let God. And the men of my home group listened to me tell them about these dreadful, terrible things that I had done. And I see people worrying and fearing over the fifth step. And they are always talking about, I can't trust anybody to hear what I had done. The natures of our wrong does not mean list every dime you stole. I have seen poor women stand up before a women's group even and try to strip themselves down to the marrow of their bone. And all they've done is the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And I wonder, what do they mean? What are they afraid of? The nature, the worst that I did to myself, I denied me, my credibility to me. I was not believable. I told you I did not have an inferiority complex. I had a superiority complex. I was so dumb, I didn't know. Why wasn't I good enough for me? Why wasn't I enough for me? Why was I a nothing when I had what everyone else was born had? I had a soul. I had a head, two arms, and two legs. And I had a cross to carry. I do not deserve any compliment for being blind and sober. Every human being in this room has a cross they're carrying. And most of us are under doctor's care. And those who aren't probably need to go. I do not know of any man or woman sober in Alcoholics Anonymous who do not have a physical handicap. And I wonder about words. What makes it so different? Because yours is on the inside. I listen to people try to tell me something, and I wonder, what are they trying to tell me? And they wind up patting me on the shoulder in the old way that we used to do. Little children, blind folks, deaf folks, and crippled folks. And hell, I'm sober. Could you imagine me being drunk? That's pitiful. I don't like to imagine you all being drunk, for that's pitiful. But sober, each one of us wake up in the morning and we can stand free. I am free of my 11-foot cotton sack. I'm free of that burden that I brought in here with me. The fact that I divorced my son's father. The fact that I didn't know how I was going to give him those physical things that we at that time thought were so essential for a good mother. You know about getting sober and staying sober. I heard our chairman, Bob Beggar, his beautiful 15 years, shout it from the housetops, sing it from the hills. Because what you're telling the new person is, through the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do it too. I am very euphoric August and September. Because I can tell you what I was doing 24 years ago this day. I was drunk somewhere. It becomes unimportant where, when, or with whom. It becomes so unimportant because today I'm sober. And I'm learning the new way to use our language. I'm learning to feel different about the words. I'm learning to believe that this is a God-given program. I'm learning to believe that I'm a child of God. I'm learning to believe that 11th step, that all he wants for me to do is ask, what is your will? And he's going to give me the power to carry it out. I believe it. And anything that I can do under God, I can do before man. I do not censure my babies. I do not permit people to censure me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship, meaning we freely come here, of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope to enable us to maintain sobriety. And thank God, all they ask me to do is to stay away from one drink for one day. and have a God of my understanding. I didn't have a God when I came to AA. My mother had one. Now, if my mother told you there was a God, there was a God. But I didn't have one. When I was sober 18 months, some women came into my home group, and I wanted them to stay sober. And I was willing to tell these women how I had drank and what I was doing to stay sober. They were not interested. One lady who was sober 3 weeks asked me, what was the spiritual part of this program? Well, now, I had said the Lord's Prayer. I wanted to know I was raised right. But what was spiritual? Another lady who was sober 8 days asked me, when was she going to get peace of mind? Hell, I didn't know whether I had a mind or not. Whether it was, I guess it was peaceful. I wasn't troubled. It wasn't bothering me. For 18 months, I was sober. And I realized that I thought I had a whole lot, and I was willing to give it, and I didn't know how. I had obeyed. The men in my home group told me to ask in the morning for help to stay sober. And every morning I got down on one knee. I said, keep me sober. And because they said, have the grace to say thank you at night, I get down and say, thank you. And I didn't direct that to any God. I had no God. But when I was sober 18 months, I knelt and I wanted to pray to the God of my sobriety, the God who came into hell to get me. That's where I was. And I want to share these last few moments with you who are confused. I feel when I talk to people that somehow or another they are still afraid of one another. And they seem to want so desperately to structure a life so that somehow someone's going to come along and say, you're doing it right. The longer I am sober, the longer I hear you, the more I realize that you are not the one to tell me. I get down on my knees and stay there, and my God tells me when I am right. And the pain in my gut tells me when I am wrong. I used to brood about my sins, and I used to worry about the shame. But by staying sober one day at a time, applying to the best of my ability, and nitpicking, I'm going to tell you about the best of my ability. I don't judge me, because you see, I'm human. Some days I wake up and my head hurts. I've recently had to accept a heart condition. I'm not as scared of dying today as I was then because I find the medicine's working. I take my medicine every day and it works. And some days, for whatever reason it is, it's just not able for me to shuck off my weaknesses. You see, I'm still a total person. And in those days, I do the best I can. And on those days, I might suffer under anger. I might be extremely selfish. I might suffer from my other sin, playing God. But when I kneel down at night to take my personal inventory, I do not say that I had not done the best I could. Because the day that I again began to be my God and judge Esther as I did when I was drinking, that's the day that I am beginning to go back. You see, I don't understand God. I cannot explain the God who wants me sober. Because if I could explain him, then he ain't big enough. Because I do not want a God that's got to have me wait in line. Because I believe every one of you are praying to a God. And I happen to be of the Christian belief that there's only one God. And if I'm going to have the job of saying, Esther, you didn't do the best you could today, well, then I got to wait my turn. Because you might have not done the best you could that day either, and God's going to have a hell of a job But the God that I kneel down to don't permit that. He said, pray only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. And it says practice. Practice. That's like learning, not knowing. I do not have a licentious God. He has not given me license to sin, but freedom to come to him for forgiveness. And because I know what happiness is today, I accept his forgiveness. I don't know anything about alcoholism. I don't know anything about it. In fact, I was sober, a good while before this thing of the disease was really promoted, even though I think it was spoken of in 55 and stuff like that. It didn't register with me until much later when I found that people who did a lot of reading was really getting some comfort out of the idea that this is a disease. Okay, I got a disease. It's like I'm 5'4.5". I mean, what are you saying to me? But I'm learning about sobriety-ism, and I like sobriety-ism. Because in sobriety-ism, I am living all those things in my youth I longed for and hungered for. There's no more yearning in me, for I'm there. Alcoholics Anonymous is there for me, and I have it. It is not the fragmented Esther, the undeveloped, poor, pitiful child of yesterday. Today I am, to the best of my ability, with God, with the program, with the fellowship, one ball of wax. And I don't have to prove to anybody I'm grateful by always dragging up some foul thing that I did yesterday. Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to grow through attraction. What am I showing the new person? If I'm no better today and free today from the fears and doubts and anxieties that I had last year, year before last, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, why should you want to follow me? And it says, thoroughly follow that path. The men that I followed were men who were not apologizing. They were not fearful. They stood strong, not in their own right, but the right of God in this program. And I would have you know that I have not lived a sheltered life in the program from worldly problems. You know, I keep going back because I wanted to tell you about this burden that I had, the terrible burden of divorcing my husband, my son's father. But in staying sober about 5 or 6 years, I was able to really look at my past and see it. Without any of the hurt. All the hurt was gone. But I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten. And I'm willing to swap drunk stories with any new person that needs to hear how bad I was. New person. Because I would hope soon that new person would empty their garbage bag and begin to put sober things in there, and then we can swap sober stories. But after I was sober 5 or 6 years, I could look back at that Esther, a young woman married to a man who didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't gamble. That cat didn't even openly chase women. And I got grateful that I divorced a righteous bastard like that before I got sober. I hate to spend all of my sobriety trying to make amends. But I was freed from that because he remarried again and he has not been my problem. I have no regrets for yesterday at all. You know, the thing when I came in, they were saying it was harder for a single person to make this program than a man. I mean, than a married person. And that it was harder for a woman to make the program than a man. I have taken that off the shelf long time ago. I drank as a woman. I cannot get sober any other way. There are no impediments to getting sober and being sober. There is no impediments to accepting the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The men in my home group made me responsible for me, to me, and not to the God of yesterday. You know, as a little girl, I used to stand out in the yard and look up at the sky and wonder about God. I had a beautiful mother, but she was only 5'2" tall, and she was plump and dimpled. And I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. But my mother's God was up there beyond the moon and the stars, and I heard that the sun was 96 million miles away. And even though I never openly defied her in a way that some others might have because I was chicken, I always seemed to have been in trouble with her. But from a little girl, I never made any appeal to God to come way down and help me because I knew long before God could get to me, my mother would have beat hell out of me, so I didn't bother God. But today I do bother God. Today I go to my God because it was up to me to let him in. He was always there, always there. I recently have been privileged to sponsor a lady, and after she was sober 6 months, she turned to me with tears in her eyes. And about her past, she said, "Esther, was I that dumb?" And I said, "Yes, Dot. You see, I was that dumb. I was so dumb. And I used to apologize for that. But today I'm grateful to be dumb because I am teachable. That's why I listen to new people, to middle people, to old timers. This is why I listen to me when I talk, because I'm a nitpicker. I don't dare today fall into the easy slap-dap way of repeating cliches and platitudes without knowing what am I saying. Because I don't know anything about extenuating circumstances and staying sober. They said, in order to keep what you've got to give it away. And I've got to be careful what I'm giving away. So I have to know what I am getting so I know what I am giving away. Many things have happened to me in these years, and when this wonderful son, whom I have not mentioned but once, but my son was the reason why I called because I could not accept drinking up his young life. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I could not stand to be a drunken mother, but I stayed because they offered me a new way of life. I don't care how one comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. If the judge sentenced you here, if you are driven here through your circumstances, if one comes through treatment centers, I don't care. But I would hope that what happened to me will happen to you, that you'll have a moment of truth in which you will know that you no longer want to do what you have been doing. I'm aware for the last 10, maybe 12 years, people come to Alcoholics Anonymous who also use drugs. I am trying to learn the language. I always want to say do dope, but they say that ain't right. But I never did dope or pills because it wasn't appealing. It was there, but the people who were lobby behind marijuana was not attractive. I wanted to finger pop and get it together and get it all. Let's be together. Let's party. And it didn't look good. But the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. If one tells me they don't want to drink anymore, I welcome them. I am one who can stand before you and my God and say, I love everybody in the world. I love everything that God has created. I do have a little hard time loving those roaches that come up my kitchen sometime, but I say, God, you must have some good reason for them. If nothing else but to make me clean more often, I don't know. I just believe he's got to have a good reason for them. But I do love everything because, you know, God loves me. God loves me. And how can I kneel down at night and say truthfully to God, I am grateful? Because it was men and women who came and shared. But I have to learn how to love. My son got 16, and he must have read the Bible. You know, the first part with all those begats in it? And he went out and started begatting. And by the time he was 17, he had one living daughter and two girls pregnant. And so I just figured that I'd better get this child married. He has a problem. And by the time 1970 came around, my son had been to the penitentiary, and I had learned to live with the love of the people in AA, and I thought that I was giving my son love. But it was in February of 1970 that my son stood before me and he said, "Mama, teach me to love my children." And it was in that instant that I also recognized that all his life, I had given him a qualified love. All my son's life, I had said, "Tommy, be good so that I can love you. Tommy, let me love you. Tommy, help me to love you." And in that same moment, I recognized that I had been greedily accepting God's unconditional love for me through Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stood there before my son, and in my head, I stood before my God, and I knew if God had ever said to me, "Esther, be good, and I'll love you," God would have never gotten around to loving me. There is a progression in sobriety. We glibly say alcoholism affects us physically, mentally, and spiritually. And then we get sober and get free of alcohol, and that's physical sobriety. And then they begin to worry and try to get the steps and try to do better and make confusion. And I had to be sober 21 years before I heard a woman from New York talk specifically about spiritual sobriety. Spiritual sobriety. That's the love that I recognize of God for me. This is why I come to meetings today. For I know today that the responsibility to my sobriety does not necessarily hinge this morning, this day, on the fact that I don't need a drink, I don't want a drink, I don't have to drink. But the insanity from which I want to stay recovered is that which made me yesterday, due to the fact I had no spiritual sobriety, I had no mental sobriety, permitted me to pick up a drink. I come here to you so that I can progress and learn and grow strong. For I am responsible today not for what I learned yesterday, but what I am learning today. And I get high up. Because it's all right being dumb, because you're going to teach me something this day. Every morning I wake up looking forward to what I'm going to learn. And it's all right that I make mistakes. It's all right that I don't get things done in the order that once I would have had to get them done. Because I try very hard to mean what I say in the morning. "Here, Lord, you do it for me. You guide me. Turn my will and life over." I try, but in my humanity, sometime before 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if I got up at 1:30, I've got it back, and I give it back. But that don't bother me. I just give it back again. Because, you see, now it's a different ballgame altogether. I love the theme of this conference. Let it begin with love. Let it begin every morning with the knowledge that God loves me. How do I know God loved me? I'm sober. Because believe me, if I could have been sober before AA, I would have been sober. I'd have been drinking, but I'd have been sober too. If I could have done it before, I wouldn't have got drunk. I would have done it. And that's how I know God loves me. Every morning, I awaken sober. Let it begin with love. Many of you here knew Bish. I did not know to say what I say since that 28th Southeastern in Charleston when I met him. And he said, "Did anyone tell you today that they loved you?" We do that now in my world, me and my babies. We do that to each other. Because, you see, I'm a greedy person. I'm just as greedy today as I ever was. And I want as much of this as I can get. And I found when that sixth step taught me to become willing to have God remove my defects and humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings, that I didn't have to do anything about the bad things, but I had to do something about the good things. A wonderful old man who's very sick today with 32 years sobriety told me, "Don't work on your defects." It took me 3 months to figure out what Jerry Jackson was telling me. Work on the positive things. Work on being kind, being charitable, being patient, being understanding, being willing. And you know, I'm not quite as hateful or selfish as I am when I'm thinking about, I don't want to be selfish. I don't want to be greedy. And I don't discipline myself too good. But when I am looking up with the knowledge that I want to do these things out of gratitude for God, for His mercy. I am not sober because I'm sinless. And by the way, do you all know that lying, cheating, stealing, and sex don't get you drunk? Drinking alcohol gets you drunk. You all want to see my inventory sometime. Boy, it's a son of a gun. And that's how come I know that each and every one of us this day can be sober. Every one of us in this room, there's no one here that is denied the love. I know there's some of you who may not know of it. And I will share with you, don't be afraid. I used to be too. I used to sit out there, and those big, burly men, oh dear, Doc is here. Doc was one of them men. Would get up there and scare hell out of me. They'd talk about God so familiarly. And I would wonder about me sitting there knowing as I thought I knew. Because I was my God, and I said He wouldn't, and I didn't. But He could, and He did, and I'm sober. Again, I want to thank all who have had anything to do with the joy of this moment. At this moment, I feel in me that I wish I could share with you just how wonderful it is to be sober. But I will give to you who may not be aware of the gifts that you're getting in this program. You who are very new and are confused have got time. Take it. Use it. One day at a time. Don't hurry it. Don't rush it. Don't try to figure out what you should have at X amount of days. Take time. Time to listen and learn how to listen and grow. And then one day you'll be able to read and understand. But listen. Listen to the music that's in this room right now. Listen to the joy that's coming out of the hearts of every one of the people who are sober any time to be aware that they don't have to fear and doubt. Listen to the drum that's beating for every one of us in this room. We're all walking to the same drum beat at this moment. Thank God I'm sober. Thank God I'm sober. Isn't it good being sober? Isn't it nice being sober? Open-mindedness is hard to come by, but try for it. And know that when I say I love you, I'm not asking you to change. I'm only telling you I accept you just as you are. For tonight, when I kneel down and thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, I will thank God for every human being that He's put in my life, because it was through you that I learned of His love. God bless you, and I love you.